one of the main reasons why I wanted to live in Israel is because that during the time of the Holocaust, when my father was lost all his family and went from work camps to concentration camps to death marches, there was absolutely nobody there to protect him. And living here in Israel, the Jews have their own state, their own land, and have a fantastic army, which is made up of all our wonderful boys, all our wonderful children, to protect us. So October the 7th, it started in our house at 7:30 in the morning when my youngest son, who's a soldier, his telephone rings, and it's also was the Shabbat, the Sabbath morning, where we don't normally use our phones. So the minute the phone went, I thought, his phone went off, I knew that something was wrong. He actually got a phone call to say, could he wake up his friend, who was in a different part of the army than him. Somebody called him, somebody he knew, said they couldn't get hold of him. Could he go to his house and wake him up? They need him immediately, and they need him to go down to the base. So he went from our house, his friend just lives two streets away, knocked on his door, took him about 20 minutes to wake him up, and he managed to wake him up. Why do I tell you this story? Why do I start off with this story? Because his friend was actually shot on October the 7th, in one of the kibbutzim down south. Thank God he was okay. But that was the first thing that happened. And then he came home, and about 10 minutes later, his phone went again and said that it was the army. They were calling him. He needed to go down to his base. So he gets ready, and at this point, we really don't know what's going on. He goes and he takes the car, and he drives off. And then about half an hour later, my other son arrives with his new wife. They're newly married. And he comes into the house and he says, Mummy, he says, I've come to get my things. He's a reservist in the army. He's about to study. He's got his whole life ahead of him. And he comes in, he says, I need my things. My friends are going to pick me up, or his friends. They're, you know, they did their army service together, and they're good friends, and they're all about to just, you know, go on trips or start studying and start their lives. And he turns around to me and says, "You don't understand." He says, "This is the worst thing that's happened to Medinat Israel, to the state of Israel." And it was all very confusing because It was a festival. It was Simchat Torah, and nobody really knew what was going on. So we go out into our street, and all our neighbours are gathering around to see what's going on. And my son's there, and he said to me, he was waiting for his friends, and they get into the car and they drive off, and you just like thinking, what's going on? You know, it wasn't slowly, you know. The news was getting out, but no one really understood. In those early hours of the morning, from like 7:30 to 10 o'clock, the enormity of what was happening, of what happened.
Yeah.
So it was a very, like an emotional, terribly emotional morning, and sort of you felt a huge lack of security. At the same time, then my daughter, who lives also not far from me, came with her husband and our grandchildren and came to be with us. And again, her husband, also a reservist in the army, he also went off. So my two boys at that time went to their base, and also my son-in-law. And my third son, my oldest son, at that point didn't go. It took him 2 days before... he wasn't actually in the system, so 2 days later he made sure he was in the system and he went. Well, at that point he kind of made sure, listen, all the boys, they want to defend their country, right, it was really important to them. My boys are also all in commando units, and it was very important for them You know, they weren't going to sit and watch everybody else go and fight and, you know, and for them to sit and not do anything. So for those, even though, you know, they weren't called up, they made sure that they got their group of friends together. They made sure that they went to the base and that wherever they could take them, wherever they could put them, they went at that point, until they then made up their own sort of group and recreated themselves. Two of my boys are in Yalom, and you know, they're the ones that, like, it's the engineering corps commando sort of unit, and so they got themselves together, their team, and it's not that they went to fight at the beginning. Two of my sons went down to their base, and they were on the base for a while. In the meantime, my daughter and her and the grandchildren moved in with us, and so did my future daughter-in-law and her dog. So we had everyone to deal with. Yeah, so my emotions were sort of were put aside because I had to deal with everybody else. Mm-hmm. So after about a week or so, my two boys, in fact, my three boys went into Gaza. And there are no phones. They're not allowed to take the phones with them. There is no communication. The only communication that we had was through certain WhatsApp groups. And the logistics, the person who runs the logistics of their team used to send daily or every few days to say, you know, everybody's okay and don't worry. But obviously, as a mother in these times, to tell her not to worry or the family not to worry is impossible. Yeah. It was the worst time that I've ever been through in my life. The anxiety that I went through was absolutely impossible to even describe to anyone who has never been in that situation. And the only people that understood what I was going through were those that were going through it themselves. And not only was it just with one child, I had three boys in. And it was really quite an impossible situation to be in. No mother should have to deal with something like that. It was like there was sleepless nights. Obviously, the sleeping pills we started, both myself and my husband were popping the sleeping tablets. Otherwise, sleep just didn't, you just weren't able to sleep. And even with the sleeping tablets, you'd wake up in the middle of the night, this anxiety would just like overcome you. And every time there was a car on the street, every time in the middle of the night there was a car on the street, I used to get up and just look out the window and make sure that the car wasn't coming and stopping outside my house. Or a knock at the door, just everything made you jump, everything. It was like, you know, like, it was like I just had to stay strong and believe that my boys would be okay. And I truly believe that, even though I was full of, you know, my anxiety levels were very, very high, I really tried to stay as strong as I possibly could, because I truly believe that my strength gave them strength. And the last thing that they needed at that time was to be worrying about me, you know, like, and they did, and obviously they, you know, whenever I spoke to them, which wasn't often at all, was, "Mummy, you okay?" You know, that's what they needed to hear, that I was okay. Yeah. And so I told them I was okay. And we managed to speak to them, my oldest son, maybe once every week and a half. My youngest son just wasn't even able to speak to me, because I'm his emotional weakness, you know, so it's like he had to stay strong to be able to do the job that he needed to do. But to speak to me whilst he was inside Gaza was virtually impossible for him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't till he came out that we spoke about it, but I completely understood how he felt. Children are resilient. The children are okay. Fiancés, girlfriends, they need reassurance that everything's going to be okay. You know, they're just starting out. My older son and his fiancée are hopefully going to get married in June, and you know, they've got all these wonderful, exciting times that are meant to be happening, and they needed to know that things will be okay and these things are going to happen. You know, in the beginning, what I decided to do, you know, when many of the evacuees, they left their homes, they didn't have anything with them at all. They left, they didn't have toys for the kids, they didn't have clothes, they didn't have anything. And so what I decided to do was I decided just to go to the hotels and just walk around and talk to people and see how they were feeling and what they needed on a personal level. And actually found one like really lovely family who's everybody was donating clothes and toys, but there was one particularly lovely young woman who was a mother. She was tiny, and all the clothes that had been donated just they didn't fit her because she was so small. So just remember, I asked in our community people who had clothes an American size 4 or something like that, and we managed to get the clothes for her and give clothes to her and her family. And you see how difficult it is when whole communities are like taken from their homes and being sent somewhere else to live, basically. But the amazing thing is that, especially the ones from the Kibbutz Sim who came to Netanya, they're very strong, they're a real community, so even in the hotels they managed to successfully build themselves a whole community there as well, you know, from schools to Ganim to all sorts of events that are, you know, that are going on for them. And people in Netanya also who came to the hotels to literally give themselves to help with any types of activities that they could. People from our community helping raise money for clothes and for toys, anything that they needed. All sorts of things happened to me with my boys, like when they came home, and one of them's been released now, he's out. But one of them, for instance, called me one Friday night. Generally, you know, on a Shabbat, I don't usually use my phone, but the war started and the boys in the army, my phone's always been open on a Friday night. It was just one particular Friday night. I'd spoken to two of my boys, and my youngest one was in Gaza. I said, okay, I know he's not going to be able to call me, so we went out for dinner. I didn't take my phone with me. And, it's just luck would have it that Friday night, my younger son started looking for me. So he caught my son's fiance called my son-in-law, and she said that my youngest one's looking for me. Quickly called him, and he told me, I've come out of Gaza. We started speaking. I have absolutely no idea what I said to him, because I was so emotional and so shocked by the fact that he was out of Gaza. And we were busy speaking, and then all of a sudden he said, no, Mummy, I can't speak to you, and put the phone down on me. And he sounded terrible. That was like one of the worst conversations I've ever had. So I said to my husband, right, we're going to go home, and I'm going to call him back. So we went home, I called him back, and he didn't answer the phone. So I was trying to wrap my brains, how can I get hold of him? Because I just felt that I needed to speak to him, because he just sounded awful on the phone. So in the end, I managed to, there was another phone, a person that I thought about phoning. He's the Rasap of his unit. So I called him, and he happened to be with him on the base. And his team member took the phone off him, and he said to me, you need to, and he said, Daniela, my name. He told me his name. And he said, listen, your son's fine. He said, but you should just know that it's very, very difficult to come out of Gaza and transition into regular life. From one minute you're a soldier, and from that one minute, the next minute you're sort of home. He said he needs time. He's fine and he needs time. So that was like a real learning curve for me, because you understand that they've been put in one position and then all of a sudden they're home and it's going to take them time to transition. Mm-hmm. So that was like very helpful that he got hold of me, and then I calmed down. And then when he came home, and they knew that they were going to go back into Gaza, they couldn't allow themselves mm-hmm. to, you know, to like completely relax and feel free at home. Some of them are talking, some of them are not. But they've been through difficult times. Some of them basically have had friends dying in their arms, and that's not easy to deal with. My oldest son lost his officer, who was his officer when he was in the army, mm-hmm. and he was a good friend of his. And when I told you they made up this team, mm-hmm. he also came and joined their team, but not as an officer. That's how humble this mm-hmm. he was. When the boys come out, they don't just come home straight away. They take them and they have a few days where they speak to them. I think psychologists speak to them, and they're offered, like, even after those few days, that those that feel they need therapy now or maybe in the future, that the army are taking care of them in that respect. When my father passed away 6 years ago, and he always went to any ceremony, you know, for the boys when they were in the army, every ceremony that he could go to, every tekas, he was there. He was so proud of each and every one of them. And he was proud of the fact that we have this army, and he would say, fight. I feel that he's really watching over our boys. He really gives me my strength to carry on and to believe that this is what we need to do. For us as Jews, the state of Israel is our safe haven. It's the only place that we have. And we need to protect it. We need to protect it for ourselves, and we need to protect it for many future generations to come. And I know that's what my father would definitely say. Speaking to people from England who say, you know, we need to keep quiet and keep our heads down. No, you need to be proud of who you are. You need to be proud of being Jewish. Don't keep your head down. You have Israel. Israel's here to protect each and every Jew around the world. So it's not 1933. Times are different. And appreciate that and stand up for what's right.